It's 5:06 and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This time of year, many people can feel lonely. With the holidays upon us, sometimes it can be easy to get lost in the holiday shuffle.
We want to know what you do to fight against loneliness. What do you do to enjoy your time alone? And when you do feel lonely, what do you do to stop? And when do you think solitude becomes loneliness? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email talk@WPR.org.
Elizabeth Bernstein just wrote a column on loneliness and about when being alone becomes being lonely. She's a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, and she's here to talk about this with us. Elizabeth, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, something I didn't realize, loneliness can be kind of hazardous to our health. How dangerous is it?
It can be, and it's strikingly dangerous. There was a very large study done a couple years ago, looked at 300,000 people and found out that loneliness, being chronically lonely, is more dangerous to your health than alcoholism or a 15-cigarette-a-day habit. That's pretty lonely. That's pretty dangerous.
Any ideas why that is? What loneliness does to our bodies?
Well, it basically takes away a lot of protective factors. So relationships are very protective for us. People are watching out for us, brings down our blood pressure, all sorts of things that we get. We're social animals and that we get from being social and with people.
So one researcher says the rate of loneliness, however they measure that, has doubled in the last 30 years. How do they come up with that, and why are we seeing more loneliness?
Well, they're asking people, really. So they're doing a lot of studies where they ask people. But they're coming up with that number. The reason we are seeing so much more loneliness, a doubling of it in 3 decades, is a number of reasons. First of all, there's many, many more people are living alone. So that number of solo dwellers has skyrocketed. The baby boomer generation is getting older. And as they do, they're dealing with, losing friends and spouses and isolation and separation, those kinds of things. So a little more loneliness there. And then nobody wants to hear it, but I think all of this time that we spend behind our screens, connecting, searching Facebook, doing whatever it is, looking at multiple screens, it doesn't really allow us as much time with people, making actual connections. So there's a loneliness to be sitting and looking at your computer all the time.
Some people argue that technology connects us more because we can, be texting with our friends and our family, even if we're sitting alone. Do you think that's not the case?
Well, I think it is the case to an extent. And so we can keep a broader network. So say I can be friends with people, sort of, keep up to date day to day or on a weekly basis with, people I went to high school with, a broad number of people. And I can stay more in touch with my cousins who live, on the other side of the country. But the issue is what's it taking time away from? Is it taking away time from people in my home, people that I can, have dinner with, connections? There's also something very protective to our health about touch, about hugging, holding hands, being with one another. Again, it goes back to our heart and regulating it and good feel-good hormones that we are released in our brain. So, you can have a lot of connectivity and talk to a lot of people, but it can be on a very superficial level. Hey, how's your day? Oh, cute kids. And you're not really getting the deep emotional connections that are sort of keep loneliness at bay.
Sometimes being alone can be awesome. Solitude can be a lot of fun. What is the difference between alone time and loneliness? Where do they blur together?
Basically, researchers would say it's in your head. that line is in your head. And certainly, many people crave alone time. And a lot of people enjoy it. I enjoy it. It's great to do things alone. But it can be also too much alone time can tip you over to loneliness. But really, when I talk to psychologists and people who research relationships and emotions, they say that it's in our head. The difference between alone time that we might enjoy, it can be healthy for us to recharge, and loneliness is how we're thinking about that time. Are we enjoying it, thinking, great, I've got an hour to myself, I can take a walk, I can read a book, I can do whatever, you know, hike in the woods? Or are we thinking, gosh, you know, I have no friends. What's wrong with me? No, I don't matter. Nobody called me in the last few hours. You know, so it's this sort of narrative that we tell ourselves that can make us lonely.
Do you think there's a stigma that attaches itself to loneliness so that even if someone may actually be lonely, they don't know it because they don't want to admit it or they don't want to get help for it?
It's that they don't want to, there's definitely a stigma. I really agree with that. I think I sort of talked when I was working on this column, I talked to a bunch of friends, family members, people about, you know, hey, do you like to eat alone? Do you go out to eat alone? Would you go to a restaurant alone? Would you go in the morning? Would you go to dinner and sit down at a table by yourself and order a glass of wine? What kind of restaurant? And so it turned out so many people said, no, you know, I might go for lunch and sit at the bar. You know, I'm not going to sit down at a table for dinner. Well, why not? Oh, well, people think I'm, you know, what's wrong with me? I'll think what's wrong with me. Look at me. I can't find somebody to dine with. So there's a stigma, and we feed it to ourselves again.
So if we're feeling that loneliness in our brain, in our lives, what are some of the steps in talking to people about this that you found to break the lonely cycle?
To do sort of identify it. What am I feeling? Is, you know, loneliness is different than depression, which is really long lasting, you know, doesn't need to be treated. But, you know, what am I feeling? And it's okay. You want to not accept that stigma. You have to tell yourself it is okay to be lonely. Like, oh, what do I feel? I'm lonely. You know, I wish I had someone to hang out with right now. I don't want to be alone right now. That's the key, too. Alone time is when you want it. And loneliness is sort of alone time you don't want. So, you know, you have to sort of tell yourself, you know what, I don't really want to be lonely, but it's okay. And then think of something to do, you know, something that you can enjoy by yourself. You can watch a movie, you can read, take a walk. Like, you know, what can you do that you can enjoy by yourself? And also, if you think you're lonely a lot, you have too much loneliness in your life, too much alone time that you don't like, you want to try to be sure to be connected. You can, you know, try to join some groups or volunteer. Or psychologists I talked to said, you know, even take yourself to the restaurant and sit at the bar, talk to the bartender. You know, there's things you can do to be around people. And usually, if you're around people and you want to talk, you'll end up talking.
I'm really struck by what you said about it kind of being in our heads about how we frame it. So does that mean that if we're feeling lonely, you know, we should really work on positive self-talk and, you know, changing our attitudes about it and doing some things to make ourselves feel positive about being alone?
Exactly. So you want to assess the situation. You know, I'm lonely right now. You know, I didn't really want to spend Saturday evening alone, whatever. But, you know, or my spouse is away on a business trip, whatever it is. But you know what? You have to tell yourself, this is going to end. You know, I'm not going to be alone tomorrow, or I have plans this week. Or if you don't and you're looking at the situation, it looks a little more bleak, then, hey, there's things I can do. I can take a class. I can, you know, go to the gym more often, try to, you know, join a class at the gym. I can do things that will help me feel less lonely. So you want to tell yourself, it's in my control to get out of this. First of all, it's temporary. If it feels it's not temporary, then, you know, I have control to fix it.
One of the negative self-talk examples you give in your writing is, I'm alone because nobody cares. Nobody wants to hang out with me. My loved ones aren't getting in touch. How do you change that negative self-talk?
I have to admit I'm guilty of it. I would be surprised if, based on the response to the article, that if many people couldn't admit it sometimes, that there aren't many people that would say it if they were honest. But you need to remind yourself, wait, you know, I'm sitting here thinking nobody loves me. I'll make myself count the people. Well, wait, you know, you just got off the phone with so-and-so. Oh, yeah, you canceled lunch plans with so-and-so because you had to work. You know, I'll remind myself, like, these are the reasons why you're alone right now. You're not, there's people who love you. There's people who care. It's just that they are also busy at this moment. You don't have to have your hand held every minute. What was interesting to me that the psychologists all said is when you get really lonely, it's tapping into something, not always something in the present. It's tapping into your early childhood and feelings before you're even conscious of them, of worrying that you were alone, like somebody wouldn't be there to take care of you. Your caretaker wouldn't be there if you needed her or him. So it's often tapping into a fear from much earlier in your life.
Let's take one of our callers. We have Laura joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I'm actually really excited about this topic. I'm somebody who chooses to spend some time alone, and I enjoy it. I feel refreshed when I do. And I think that social media has also played a role in this, that there's almost a competitive nature to being social. And people sometimes feel the need to go out and get social because they feel like other people are. And I think that is one of the things that kind of feeds into this this self-talk, this negative self-talk. So thanks for the show, and I'll take any comments up here.
Thank you so much, Laura. And Laura's talking about technology, and I know, and I don't have it at my fingertips, but I know I've seen at least one study that said that spending too much time on Facebook makes people feel worse about themselves. I'm sure there are competing bodies of research, but I mean, I think that potential is there. What do you think, Elizabeth?
Exactly. I know the study you're talking about, I believe it was from Columbia University, and an important study. It said, yes, you feel worse the more time you spend on Facebook and social media, and exactly what your caller is saying, that it's almost like an amount of competition and bragging going on there. Look how many friends I have. Look how much fun I'm having with my friends. Here's pictures of me with my friends, with my perfect family. You know, it goes on and on. There's never anybody sort of saying, hey, you know, here's a picture of me with my cup of tea, reading my book Friday night, you know. So nobody wants to post those, you know. So nobody wants to, again, goes back to the stigma. But if you do, and I did as an experiment a while back, took myself to lunch to sort of just celebrate some willpower I had, and then posted the picture of the lunch and said, here's my tuna burger and my iced tea that I'm having. I'm really take myself out to lunch to celebrate something personal, and I'm really happy. And I was stunned at how many people hit like. And so I thought, well, I might be tapping into something. People might be, you know, it's not the norm to say, hey, I spent time alone. I'm posting on Facebook. Facebook is all about friends and people.
Let's see a new wave of Saturday solo selfies popping up on Facebook this weekend. We're talking to Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist for The Wall Street Journal. We're talking about loneliness.
And we want to know, what about you? What do you do when you find yourself feeling lonely? Do you have ways that you cope, ways that have gotten you through it? And have you been able to reframe it so that you're not lonely, you're enjoying solitude? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're talking right now about loneliness with Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist for The Wall Street Journal. She had a recent column about loneliness and what you can do to reframe it when you find yourself feeling lonely.
We want to hear from you. What do you do to enjoy time alone? And if you feel lonely, what do you do to get out of that zone? Call us at 800-642-1234 or send us an email, talk@WPR.org. Jackie in Drummond is with us now. Jackie, hi.
Oh, hi. I just revised all my plans because I was so excited about listening to this. I just finished. I'm a senior citizen. I finished my three-hour walk, and now it's time to go to my local fish fry. And I guess I'm pretty lucky that I feel comfortable going places alone because I lead a grief group, and I asked all my people that I'm dealing with, would you ever go eat alone? And nobody would. And I live alone, and if I didn't go, I would just be home alone. And I guarantee when I go into the sawmill here in Sealy tonight, I will run into friends that I know, and it's so welcoming. And one more statement, I think I would be lonely in a crowd in Minneapolis, but in a small town, you don't feel lonely. And I don't know if you covered those feelings you know, in your column, but now I can go in and eat because I told you my story.
Hey, have a great fish fry, Jackie. So, Elizabeth, what do you think of Jackie's story?
I'm kind of jealous. I want to go to the fish fry. So I think that I can relate to that. I'm sure so many people can. But again, it's hard. The people she's talking about in her grief group, so many people say, I won't go eat alone. I won't go out there. And they suffer from, you know, deep loneliness, but yet can't seem to get themselves out there. Jackie has found the answer. She understands it intuitively. I don't know how hard it was for her, you know, to go there originally and do it things alone. But if you're just out and about, people, and you smile, people will smile back at you. You should do that. Go down the street and just randomly sort of, you know, don't smile at people like they think you're nuts. But, you know, if someone catches, looks at you and you meet eyes, smile. They will smile back. It's a natural reaction. So if you go somewhere, you sort of smile at somebody, you sit down next to them, you probably will start talking. And even small talk, just making a human connection, can really buffet this loneliness. But you can't do it alone in your home. So that's the key. You could. And about the small town, I have lived in both small towns and big cities, and I agree. I think that in small towns, people know you more. You feel known, even if, you know, you're not friends with everybody. You do feel known. You feel held. You have a place there. It's easier to sort of, feel yourself there, have a place in that community, be part of a community in
that's,
a small.
That's interesting, because there's been some scholarship out saying that in cities, people are more social. And some people saying that when you live alone, you're more social, too, because, you know, as in that example, sometimes you're forced to go out more and you're free to go out more. So it's interesting the way different people process that. And let's go next to Jenny. Jenny's joining us in Green Bay. Hi, Jenny.
Hello. I did archaeology in the field for about a year and a half. And what I would do is I would be on the road. So I spent 211 nights in hotel rooms at one point in time and in a year. And it was a thing where I didn't have my family and friends. I'm obviously from Wisconsin, but Texas is kind of far away. And what I would, you know, was before I had a smartphone with Facebook on it. What I ended up doing is getting things crossed off my reading list and other things. Like I had been meaning to read a Mercedes Lackey series, but we were on projects for long enough where I could go to the local library. And I felt like I was doing something. We didn't have a TV at that job either. It was like me in a hotel room all by myself.
Did that feel like
a night.
Jenny, did that feel like nourishing time or did it feel lonely?
It started out feeling lonely because I'm an extremely social person, and it was hard at first. And then I realized, you know, it's not like why do I have to go talk to people? I don't have to just go talk to people for the sake of talking to people. I have me time. So what can I do with my me time that I want to do?
So you found things that enriched your life.
It was reading. Yeah, then I learned to knit and discovered how terrible I am at knitting.
Join the club. All right, thanks so much for that call, Jenny. And what about the way Jenny coped with that, Elizabeth?
Well, look, it's very admirable. It's a lesson for everybody. It's the way you do it. One thing is hobbies. I should have mentioned before, you know, so if it's bad knitting or reading or scrapbooking, anything that you do, hobbies are a great way to fill alone time. And TV shouldn't necessarily be your only hobby. But also, again, it goes back to telling yourself what this time, framing this time for yourself. So you're going back to this hotel room by yourself after work. You're doing it 211 days a year. Instead of telling yourself, great, I'm going there. It's going to be just me and these four walls and no TV. And, you know, after dinner, I'm done. You can say, wait, here's a plan your evening. I'm going to read for a few hours. I might write a letter, write my journal, do some yoga, whatever you do. I'm going to do all of these things, and I'm going to knock off early, you know, tonight so I can get up early. Tell yourself in a positive way, this is the nice evening I'm going to have alone, and it'll probably go that way.
Elizabeth, holiday season is coming up. Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas down the road. A lot of people maybe feel increased loneliness, especially if they can't be with family and friends or they've lost family and friends over the years. Any advice for those looking ahead at the holiday blues?
Yeah, it's a hard time. One thing we didn't talk about, which is very true, is you can be alone with other people. So you can be alone in a marriage that's bad or relationship, and you can be alone sitting at a family meal if you're looking around the table thinking these people are all crazy. I have nothing in common. We're not talking about anything real. We're just bickering about old things. So it can be lonely time even if you're with a lot of people this time. Can be lonely if you've lost somebody. You're going through it alone. The advice, again, would be to plan some things for yourself. So you have no control over how much time you can spend with other people, how much time you can spend with the people, you know, you would really like to be with, especially if they're gone. But you can plan time for yourself. You can do something for yourself, take yourself to a meal or to a good movie or a play or the opera, something, a spa. You can do things for yourself throughout the holidays. And, again, the reading, not everybody's a reader, but reading is huge to combat loneliness because you just open that book. Your mind cannot read that book, especially if it's a good one, and go continue to tell itself it's all alone. It can't do two things at once. It's going to get into that story. There's characters. There's books on anything. We could read a book on any one of your hobbies or interests. That's another huge thing. Maybe beef up your book list.
All right. That's some great advice. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Elizabeth Bernstein, Bonds columnist for The Wall Street Journal.